You're listening to the Art of Parenting podcast. I'm your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell. Welcome and thank you for joining me. I created this podcast along with everything I do at yourparentingmentor.com to support and inspire you to be the best parent you can be. I know for a fact and from experience that parenting was never meant to be done alone. From conception to preschool, my mission is to give you the tools, strategies, and knowledge to embrace and elevate your parenting experience. I'm dedicated to supporting, inspiring, and guiding you to nurture your child's immense potential with as much joy and ease as humanly possible. Make sure to take time to check out all of the resources I have gathered for you in the show notes, as well as on my website, yourparentingmentor.com. And be sure to get on my email list so you do not miss a single episode and other products and events I curate specifically for you. And please do not hesitate to reach out if you have any questions, concerns, or feedback. A warm welcome to you, and thanks for tuning in. Hello and welcome back to The Art of Parenting. This is your host, Jeanne-Marie Pennell. And today I have Catherine Martinko with us to talk all about getting our children off of screens and finding balance, which if you've been following me for a bit, you know this is a passion topic for me. So I am really thrilled to have Catherine on the show today. Catherine, thank you for being here and taking the time to speak with me.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Catherine, I always like to get our conversation started with this question that I ask all of my guests, and that is, how do you define the art of parenting?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I think that the art of parenting really is about conveying the principles that you believe to be the most important in life to your children and setting them off in the world on the right foot and watching them succeed.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yes. Sharing our values is so important. Thank you for that. And before we get started, I would love for you to just introduce yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about your background and how you came to write this wonderful book that you've just published.
Sure. Well, I have spent the better part of a decade as a journalist, a writer, and an editor at treehugger.com, which is an environmental news website. And while I worked there, I became really interested in the question of free-range play and sort of an anti-helicopter mentality toward raising our kids, where we need to promote resilience in them and boost their independence so that they can, face challenges and succeed as they go forward in the world. And then this sort of combined with my interest in digital media, which I saw taking over a lot of aspects of people's lives. And so I ended up writing a lot about it while I was at Treehugger and eventually selling a proposal to a publishing house and writing Childhood Unplugged, Practical Advice to Get Kids Off Screens and Find Balance. And it just came out this past July. I'm also the mother of three boys, ages 8, 12, and 14. So I can certainly speak for this challenge of balancing digital media with our kids. I'm living it on a daily basis. So I know exactly what parents are dealing with every single day.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for writing this book, because as I said in the introduction, this has been a true passion of mine, but I'm an older parent. I have, grown adults. So I feel that sometimes I'm maybe out of line by wanting to really encourage that we not go this, down this digital road with our children. So I'm very happy that you're here with younger children. So you're navigating it. And what I feel, I guess, is important when I preface, like, I don't have the issues that younger parents have today, because I did not have digital devices when I was a young parent, right? When I had young children, like, they weren't available yet. And today it's like the young parents themselves have to deal with negotiating with themselves about the use of digital devices, which I think is just an added kind of, conundrum that we need to navigate as parents. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. So I think that parents have a real challenge. They're facing a difficult conundrum for sure. I think that that's a good way of putting it. There's a lot of social pressure on parents these days to give their kids devices from a very young age. It's become societally accepted normalized, despite the fact that a lot of parents are genuinely concerned about what happens when we hand these devices over to kids at such young ages. And then parents are also on devices themselves a lot. So we are contending with a culture that has just made it so easy to resort to these devices. And my issue with that is that, you know, we could go on and on about all of the challenges and the bad things that happen from having too much screen time, but we have to also focus on all the things that we lose, you know, when we are displacing in-person and face-to-face interactions with these devices. So you're losing opportunities to be engaging with your child face-to-face and helping the sorts of lessons that kids desperately need in order to develop optimally.
Yes, yes. And for me, it's also like from my educational background, it's all the sensorial experiences that children lose out, you know, especially when they're handed a device so young.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so for me, I'm kind of intrigued as to when you researched, you know, to write your book, The Childhood Unplugged, what were some of the maybe the statistics that we can share with parents of the pros and the cons of handing over kind of our digital devices or feeling obligated? And, you know, this is modern day society of consumerism, of great marketing where, you know, we're being told that if we don't give an iPad to our 9 month old, they're, you know, they're going to lose out in life, whatever. and I find that like, you know, I loved your introduction about the art of parenting, of that it is about our values. It is about the choices that we make in our own households. And so I'd love if you could share maybe some statistics that could help parents make a better informed decision about whether or not to hand over a digital device to young children.
Certainly. Well, I think that some of the most alarming statistics really are just the sheer amount of time that kids are spending on devices. And I think parents often don't understand how much time their kids are actually on devices. And by devices, this can mean a lot of different things. This can mean smartphones, it could be a computer, it could be video games. There's lots of different social media platforms. There's YouTube, there's gaming apps, lots of different things that kids are using. So the latest numbers from Common Sense Media, which is an NGO that tracks this kind of thing, show that the daily total entertainment screen use for tweens, so ages 8 to 12, is on average 5.5 hours a day. And for teenagers between 13 and 18, it's 8 hours and 40 minutes. So keep in mind that this is entertainment time. These are hours that are outside of school hours. You know, this is outside of the time that they're sleeping, presumably outside of the time that they're supposed to be doing homework or exercising or talking to friends or doing other things in person. It's a math problem. I mean, really, there's limited hours in the day. How can you possibly be spending more than one third out of a 24-hour period on your device and not be suffering the consequences of it? And it is bearing out that there are consequences to pay. There's another really interesting study that came out last year from Sapien Labs that found that screens can displace up to 2,000 hours a year that would otherwise be spent in face-to-face interactions. So when we know that, you know, everyone from babies who desperately need, you know, to look at their parents' faces, to develop smile reflexes, you know, to teenagers who are facing, you know, emotional crises on a daily basis with friendships and academic issues and whatnot. These are children of all ages that are missing out on opportunities to be engaging with their parents and turning something that might seem very difficult into something that's beneficial and good. So really, I think the big question here is, you know, what kind of life do you want your child to have? How important is it to you that your child have an imaginative, play-filled, fleeting stage of life rather than something that's just being consumed by a screen?
Yes, yes. Such a good point, because it's, I mean, it's really the formation of, you know, who they're going to be as adult, and we're taking that away from them by just letting them be entertained for 5 hours a day. That's crazy. I was trying to do the math in my head, like how many hours is that? How many days is that in a year? Like, that's crazy. And so, you know, with you say you have three boys who are probably in an environment where other children might have access to devices, video games, and so forth. How do you, as a parent, deal with maybe their kind of, why not me? You know, it's not fair, and so on. And do you hear that from your children?
Yes, I certainly do hear it from them. You know, just because I've written a book on the topic doesn't mean that I have managed to convince my children necessarily that it is the best path, but I'm hoping that eventually they will thank me for it. I know many other parents say that they will. My oldest is 14. He's in ninth grade, and he is one of just a handful of kids in his school that do not have a smartphone. This is an ongoing point of contention, but I don't see that as necessarily a negative. I see it as an opportunity to talk to him constantly about what my concerns are, and the fact that to me, the benefits of having a smartphone simply do not outweigh the cons. And I have a lot of very legitimate reasons for not wanting him to have a phone. Admittedly, he doesn't really need one for our lifestyle. We live fairly close to his school. So, you know, he's able to walk to school back and forth. He's not taking public transit and whatnot. But, you know, we've come up with lots of alternatives. And I think that other families can embrace alternatives too. There's this tendency to just assume that a kid needs the most powerful technology that exists, you know, in the form of the latest smartphone model. And yet really, if you need to communicate with your kid, you can do that in much simpler and easier ways with simpler devices. My son, for instance, he does use a desktop computer at home to direct message his friends, or he uses iMessage. And that enables him to still have that independence to set up times to hang out and places to hang out without needing me to be a mediator. And yet it's not in his pocket, accessible every single minute of the day. You know, there are some parents who do give their kids phones, but will not let them have any social media access on the phone, which is also a smart move. Some parents will opt to let their kid have social media, but only access it on a desktop computer. Again, it's trying to break that instinct of constantly reaching for your phone in your pocket to be looking at it throughout the day. So there are some workarounds. My son will not be getting a smartphone until he's at least 16, and that's the absolute minimum. In fact, I got that advice from Professor Jean Twing, who is from San Diego State University, and she has three teenage daughters. She's the author of iGen, as well as Generations, which is her latest book, and she has said that her daughters will not receive smartphones until they are old enough to have driver's licenses. So she believes that handling a smartphone is on par with handling a car. Kids need that level of responsibility and emotional maturity to be able to do it.
Smart move. And I think if I look back, that's about the time that my daughter got her phone. And at the same time, I got my phone because it was a new thing for us in our family, as I mentioned earlier. So yes, what about, you know, you mentioned earlier this pressure that we have from society to, you know, to buy these devices for our children. Like, I know for here in the States, we have, you know, the pediatrician association that says, you know, no digital devices before 2 years of age, which personally, I think it's way too young, but still the manufacturers are still like creating, you know, apps and gadgets and everything for much younger children. So how do we kind of gently and lovingly explain to parents, like, this is a choice that is your responsibility, and you need to not, like, be, you know, seduced by marketing that your child is going to miss out if they don't have these devices?
Yeah, well, I think that the most effective way to convey this message is through example. And obviously, you can influence the sphere of your own home environment the most. You know, I don't really presume to tell other parents how to do things in their home if we're visiting, or if my children are in their home. But in our home, I just explain to my kids, I explain to people who come visit, that we just choose to do things differently here. And our approach has always been pretty much screen free all the way through until about the age that my kids are now. And now they'll sometimes grab a laptop to, you know, Google something on their own, or, you know, watch a movie once in a blue moon. That's reserved for very special occasions. But, you know, I think that there's a growing inclination to want to fight back against this digital deluge that is engulfing so many of us. And I think that the more parents talk about it, the more they're going to find that there are others who feel the same way. And there's power in community. And I think that if more and more parents can get together and commit to, you know, delaying giving their kids phones in grade 6, 7, 8, and waiting until high school, or waiting until 16, like I mentioned before, it gets easier, because no one wants their kid to feel like they're the only one missing out. There is a fear of that ostracism that is quite natural, I think, for all parents. But I do think that there's, you know, a growing urge to resist it. I think parents are worried about everything that their kids are missing out on offline. You know, they're starting to think that if their kids are spending all of this time on these gadgets, they're not playing outside, they're not talking to other people, they're not reading books, they're not building forts. So I think that there is, I'm hopeful that there is sort of a transition happening in that direction.
Yes. And I do believe you're right. Like there's an awareness too of the havoc that it's causing on our own lives too as adults, right? Because we get sucked into using our devices and all of that. And so if we're wanting to maybe have a better digital hygiene for ourselves, it's important to model it and to implement it in the home. So
yes, I would agree that parental modeling is key in all of this conversation. And
yeah, and I'd love to know like your personal take on that. Like how do you model that in your home?
Yeah, well, it's something I think about a lot. I think it's a challenge for many parents, myself included, because I work online. You know, I've been a remote writer, editor, and journalist for many, many years now. So my kids see me on my computer and on my phone. They're my primary tools for my job. So I think I do try to minimize the amount of time that I'm on those devices in front of my kids. My work hours are usually before they wake up in the morning, and then the hours that they were away at school. And when they come home, I generally try to put the devices away and really focus on them. It's absolutely crucial that parents put their devices down and make eye contact with their kids. Too often, you know, you've got kids who are just waiting to, you know, they're dying to have their parents' attention. They really want their parents to turn their eyes and look at them and listen to them, but instead the parent is scrolling and doing other things. So some experts recommend narrating what you're doing on your phone. So as a parent, you can say, you know, we're FaceTiming grandma right now, or we're looking up a recipe for dinner tonight, or I'm checking my email because I'm waiting to hear something from my boss. So that sort of gives it a little bit of context for the child. But I think in general, we adults really do need to examine the number of times we pick up our devices in front of our kids and think, you know, are we exhibiting the kinds of behaviors that we want our children to emulate? I think it's important to also enrich our offline lives, both as parents and those of our children. And when the offline world becomes more exciting and more stimulating and rewarding, you know, both we as parents and our children realize that we don't need those devices nearly as much as we may think. So that can be a tough thing for parents to address, but I think it's well worth it.
Yes, yes. And what kind of activities do you choose to do with your three boys to get them away from, you know, the option of being on a screen?
Yes. Well, we spend a lot of time outside. We are fortunate to live in a small town that's right on the edge of Lake Huron. So we have access to lots of hiking trails. We go to the beach in the summer almost every day after work. And in the winter, we go cross-country skiing. We do lots of outdoor sports. However, I have talked to many urban families that also have taken a digital minimalist approach to parenting. And, you know, I've talked to people who live in Manhattan and downtown Toronto, like very densely urban areas, and they believe that they live in prime locations for being screen free as well, because they have access to so many wonderful cultural resources as well as outdoor spaces there. So I think that no matter where you live, you can find things to do. We do a lot of cooking in our family. We have a sit-down family dinner every single night. So the kitchen is a hub of activity where the kids are inclined to want to be, because, you know, I'm there or my husband is there. My children do their homework when they come home. They have a lot of chores. I think when you give kids responsibilities around a house, they have less time to just hang out in their bedroom and scroll on a phone or play video games or whatnot. They also have friends over a lot, and it can feel counterintuitive to add children to the mix in order to make your life easier as a parent. But the fact is, the more kids that are over, the more distracted they are, and the more they can get lost in a wonderful creative game, and the less you're going to hear from them as a parent because they're so busy out playing. So I think that there's lots of ways to, you know, like I said, enrich the offline life and keep the kids busy.
Yes. And to me, it sounds like childhood should be, right? We're doing activities with our parents. We're having meals with our parents. We're helping around the house. We're having our friends over. Like that's what childhood is. So beautiful. I mean, it's all music to my ears when you were saying about cooking and chores and everything, because that's something that I really try to encourage with families, is, you know, really this notion of having children participate in household tasks and in, you know, participating in food preparation and so forth, because that is education. That is giving them life skills and so forth, instead of, you know, like you say, scrolling. So wonderful. Thank you for that. But what do you say to parents who might be, but all the kids have phones. I mean, they're going to miss out. They're going to be socially inept if they don't have a phone.
Well, I do hear that question a lot. I guess my response back is, what are they missing out on? You know, when you actually look, when the surveys show what the kids are doing on their devices, what they're doing is really not nearly as productive as you might like to think it is as a parent. You know, they're certainly not practicing their coding, you know, every minute of the day that they're on those devices. They're not looking at Google Maps. They're not reading Wikipedia. They're mostly watching streamed content. They're hanging out on YouTube. They are texting friends, which isn't always a bad thing necessarily. And a lot of girls in particular are on TikTok and Instagram. And we know that these platforms are not great for them. You know, they have been linked to some pretty bad outcomes in terms of mental health and body image. Kids are being exposed to a lot of content that's just not proper for their ages, that they're just not emotionally mature enough to handle a lot of the stuff that they're getting. And they're getting it out of context too. Like, you as the parent are not necessarily there to talk it through with them because you don't know what they're seeing. There's a lot of cyberbullying, you know, and that's following the kids home from school because it's now on these devices right in their home space. So there can be benefits to feeling like you're connected to your friends, but I maintain that there are better ways to feel connected to your friends than necessarily through these devices. I think that you can really prioritize in-person hangouts instead. You can, you know, make a good old-fashioned phone call sometimes. You can, you know, message with the intention of hanging out in person. I think that we're too caught up with the idea that just because this technology is new and exciting, it is therefore good, but we're actually losing a lot in the process. It's also, like I said, displacing other relationships that matter greatly, which are those of, you know, siblings and parents. And we have a lot of situations in which teens are now raising teens because they're spending all of their free time in these group chats or online watching videos instead of turning to the people who can really give them the advice and the guidance that they need desperately. So I maintain that kids are not going to be, they're not going to suffer necessarily as a result of not, you know, being in on this, you know, hyper social media saturated culture that so many other kids are a part of. It also gives kids a chance to develop human skills. You know, these are the things that differentiate us from machines. And I think that it can put kids at an advantage if they have not spent their childhood just looking at the same algorithm-driven content that everyone else has been watching too.
Yes, yes. And do you see, like, in your, you know, as you've researched and you've been in this sphere for a long time, do you see progress being made from maybe higher authorities to maybe control a little bit more, you know, what our children have access to? Because I'm just referring back to an interview I did with, and I'm sorry, the name escapes me right now, but her book was Unwired. And she was talking about the fact that the way that the phones have been created is that, like, you and I as individuals, it's really hard to control it, right? And it's almost like we need to have a movement, just like we put laws down to control the tobacco industry or the junk food industry and all of that, and that there's going to have to be some sort of higher entity to help us control that, and especially, you know, vis-a-vis our children. Like, have you seen progress being made there or not?
I agree with you completely that that's the ideal. That is what we need. I have not seen significant progress. I think that the conversation has started, you know, a bit more over this past year. You know, the Surgeon General in the U.S. issued his advisory last spring that said that social media is the issue of our times and that it can lead to very significant negative health, mental health outcomes for kids. So that was a huge step forward that had been unprecedented. I just saw a headline actually this weekend. I haven't dug into it, but apparently New York City is suing several social media companies because of the cost to the city in terms of mental health services that they're having cover. So I think that there is sort of a shift just beginning to happen. But my point, I believe, is that we can't wait around for those companies to, you know, be forced to change their business model. First of all, they're never going to be incentivized to change it because they're making money hand over fist right now. So I think it really is up to us as parents to protect our children from the negative effects of this highly addictive substance, the same way that we would limit our children's access to, you know, drugs and alcohol and cigarettes. We also have a responsibility to limit their access to dopamine inducing, you know, smartphone and social media apps.
Yes, yes. And to me, that is the most important thing that you've said about, you know, it's our choice. Like, it's, we need to be vigilant, right? I always say, like, you wouldn't hand over a pack of cigarettes to your child. So why are you, why are you handing over these devices that we know, you know, today we know from the research that it's not healthy for our children. So, but yes, beautiful. And the woman that I was trying to remember is Gaia Bernstein. She wrote Unwired, and I'll put the link in the show notes, but it is episode 96 on this podcast. And, you know, it was just very, for me, it was very eye-opening of like, there's, you know, so many apps to help us control our time on, you know, our phones and so forth, but it's really going to take, you know, schools and administrations and all that to really put kind of a kibosh on all of that. So, but like you say, it's up to us and not wait around for that to happen, but for us to take those initiations within our own homes and our family lives. So thank you. Anything else that maybe I didn't know to ask that you want to add to this conversations for parents listening?
Well, I would say that it is never too late. You know, I think that there might be a lot of parents listening who feel like they wish they had started differently earlier when their kids were younger, establishing, you know, let's say healthier digital media habits. But to those parents, I say it's okay to revisit the rules surrounding screens and social media and digital media use in your home. As a parent, you have the right to sit your kid down, even a teenager, and say, look, based on new information that I've acquired, I'm no longer comfortable with, you know, this being the norm in our home. And we are going to change things. And it is absolutely okay. And it's good for your kid too. I think that we owe this to our children to give them a stage of life when they are not glued to their device. That will come in time, you know, I mean, I hope not, but we know that the adult world very much depends on these devices, unfortunately, to function. So the longer that you can delay it for your kid, the better. And it's not necessarily a good transition. You're not going to convince your child that it's the best thing to do. You will have to go through a replacement process where you replace the time that would have been spent with that device, other offline activities. But over time, the child will adjust and will become much happier and more well-rounded. And your family environment will become more peaceful and rewarding as a result.
Yes, yes, definitely. Definitely. And there's one thing that I missed to ask also is, what do you say to parents who, you know, kind of want to justify the giving a phone to their children so that they know their whereabouts, or this tendency to want to have, you know, a look into their lives to be able to track them? Like I know families track their children through these devices. And for me, it kind of irks me because I just find that like unnecessary. But it is kind of something that is happening in our society today. Like, what do you say to this kind of parental tendency towards surveillance?
Yes, I love that question because I think it's a very important one. Smartphones have been called the world's longest umbilical cord, which I find really funny. You know, it's sort of preventing the child from individuating from the parent in a way that is very natural and actually quite important. I am opposed to parental surveillance, as you can probably imagine, for a number of reasons. I think, first of all, it places a huge burden on a single piece of technology that could break. It could get stolen. It could fall in a puddle. You know, there's so many things that could go wrong. And if your kid doesn't have real life coping skills to, you know, get out of a sticky situation or get from point A to point B on their own without relying on a phone to do it, then you've got a real problem on your hands. I've talked to parents who have not given their kids phones as teenagers, and I've actually had some really great conversations. One parent explained that her daughters think that they handle situations differently because they don't have a phone. I think often a phone can give a kid a false sense of security. And, you know, a young girl who's taking a bus or a young boy taking a bus on their own is going to be a lot more hyper aware of who's around them and who they're conversing with and the choices that they're making if they don't have a phone, as opposed to, you know, kids who have devices and just stand sort of oblivious to the world around them with their headphones on, you know, completely not paying attention to the people around them and what could maybe go wrong. So I think that you really promote better independence with a child if you're not surveilling them. There have been some interesting studies too that show that kids who are surveilled by their parents actually end up asking for help less often when they need it, as opposed to kids who are being surveilled by their, or who are not being surveilled by their parents. So it sort of creates an unhealthy dependence.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for that. That to me was important to say. Thank you. And so as we wrap up, I always like to kind of circle it back to a more personal question, if I may.
Sure.
That is, you said your eldest is 14. So if you were to go back 15 years ago when you were expecting your first child, what wise words would you tell yourself knowing all that you know today?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I would say trust your instincts. I think that, you know, if you feel like something just doesn't sit quite right with you, it probably doesn't. You know, you are entitled to feel a little bit uncomfortable with other things that are going on around you that maybe have sort of become normalized. You know, I feel like I've always sort of been going swimming upstream with this whole topic of digital media, even from the early days when all of my friends were buying iPads in like 2010, 2011, it kind of became this new diaper bag staple. And my friends were all urging me to get one. And I didn't. And I didn't quite know why not. You know, I didn't have a reason not to. There just was this gut feeling that it wasn't what I wanted in my life and in my child's life. So that has sort of paid off over time. I'm now glad that I trusted that instinct. And I would urge other parents to do the same. If you feel deep down that your kid is spending too much time on their device and that you want them to be getting more out of life, you know, you're probably right. And there are things you can do about it.
Yes. Thank you for that. Trusting our instinct for on many levels is so important. Thank you. Any parting words that you would like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I would just encourage you to look up my book, Childhood Unplugged. It has chapters that are aimed at kids of all different ages, from babies and toddlers to elementary school aged kids to teenagers, as well as chapters on parents' roles in all of this, as well as education. And if anyone's interested in keeping up on my present work, I write a Substack newsletter called The Analog Family, and I write one or two articles every single week for readers there. So that's available for anyone who would like to subscribe.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Catherine, for taking the time to share your wisdom with us and your experience to being a minimalist digital family. Thank you.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Art of Parenting podcast. And if you did, please share it with your loved ones and make sure to leave a review so it can get heard by many more. And remember, if you've got a question, let me know. I'm here for you. Till next time.